Thank you very much, Brett Martin. So in keeping with tonight's theme, which I'm glad to hear is public singing, I'm here to talk to you briefly about a family known as the Fleischers, primarily two of the brothers, Max and Dave Fleischer. Can you hear me when I turn? Okay. These two are largely forgotten today, but in their day they were giants of American culture, and I would argue titans of American democracy. Like many quintessential Americans of the early 20th century, the Fleischer brothers were from someplace else entirely. Their parents, William and Amelia, were Viennese Jews who had fled Austria, and they arrived in New York in 1887. And they had five sons, Charles, Max, Lou, Joe, and David, which was about the only non-creative thing about this family. Because from the beginning, they seemed to be directly plugged into American popular culture. William, the father, settled the family on the Lower East Side, as one did, later moved to Brownsville in Brooklyn, nearby here, and he opened a tailor shop underneath the L on 6th Avenue between 51st and 52nd Streets, which is the precise future location of Radio City Music Hall. Among his clients were Mrs. Guggenheim, Mrs. Barnum, and Mrs. Bailey. And he was also an amateur inventor. He patented several items, including a very tailor-specific one that I don't understand at all, and a brass button that you could remove the top of for easy polishing. This was purchased by the entire New York Police Department. Meanwhile, the eldest brother, Charles, went into the burgeoning carnival business and invented the claw digger game, in which you send a little crane out to go pick up a thing. What did I saw grimaces. Thank you. I wish I could talk about him. And he also did the palm reader machine featured in Big, the movie. Lewis played piano in a Nickelodeon. And Joe built his own wireless telegraph for fun one day, and the next day came running through the house announcing the sinking of the Titanic. In 1895, the brothers took a trip into town, and they attended a demonstration of Thomas Edison's very first projector, which was the image was projected on the side of the New York Herald building from a rooftop across the street. Clearly, this was the right family in the right country at the right time. Among other things, it was a time when you could still make a living as a stunt bicyclist, which Charles and Max did for a while as teenagers. Although when he came of age, Max became an illustrator for the Brooklyn Daily Eagle, which was this Verrow's great loss daily. And then he was named art editor for a new publication called Popular Science. But all this time, he had an idea brewing. More and more cartoonists, still cartoonists, were growing interested in animation, but the problem was that nobody had figured out a way to make characters' motions fluid. Max Fleischer came up with a machine that was so cool that when he told his brother Dave about it, apparently Dave couldn't sleep anymore. The two worked on the machine not far from here on Rochester Avenue in Brooklyn, and in 1987, they were awarded, not 1987, 1917, were awarded patent number 1,242,674, which, as I'm sure you all know, was the rotoscope. Very beautifully pictured here. What would happen is that you would film somebody doing a live action, and that would be projected up to the easel and then traced over by an animator. And it produced lifelike motion. I should say, in keeping with what John just said, that I stole all these pictures, and actually everything else I'm saying from a book called The Fleischer Story, which is by a graphic designer named Leslie Cabarga, and I encourage you all to go buy it. In any event, the Fleischers got together, rotoscope in hand, and they created Out of the Inkwell Studios. Max was the president, and he did the producing of the cartoons. David directed them, Lewis did the music, and poor Joe, who was kind of the Fredo of the family, worked the cameras. The Out of the Inkwell star was one Coco the Clown. This is actually Dave, who's been Dave Fleischer, who's been rotoscoped here, and Coco was a huge hit. starring in hundreds of shorts, in theatrical shorts. In the meantime, Out of the Inkwell also produced an hour-long cartoon version of The Theory of Relativity, which was praised by Albert Einstein, and clearly they had arrived. But Max was already thinking about his next invention, the one that concerns us here tonight. I will read from his application for patent 1,573,696. Be it known that I, Max Fleischer, a citizen of the United States and a resident of the city of New York, borough of Brooklyn, in the county of Kings and state of New York, have invented a new and improved song motion picture film. The problem with current sing-along technology, he points out, is that, quote, the means employed to guide the patrons in singing with the music has been based on the idea of merely shifting the indicating mark from word to word with a view to bringing about uniformity in the singing of the words. Which method, he goes on, does not take cognizance of the fact that with a number of singers, there will be great variation in the starting of the singing, as well as in the singing of a particular word or syllable. This was a problem that had vexed many. And the answer is the bouncing ball, which is seen here in the patent. It's a little hard to read, but the song is Daisy, Daisy, Give Me Your Answer, Do. In the beginning, the ball was not actually animated. The Fleischers would simply write the lyrics to popular songs on the side of a washing machine drum and then film one of them with a ball on a stick, bouncing it from syllable to syllable. The ever-enterprising, ever-sporting Sam Potts was kind enough to demonstrate this for us for a popular Van Halen song. He was just wearing that, weirdly enough. Sam, by the way, also produced many of these slides by hand with an X-Acto blade because he's crazy. Okay, meanwhile, using this, Coco's cartoons debuted in 1924 at either the Rialto or the Circle Theater, it's not quite clear which, with the song O Mabel by Gus Kahn and Ted Fiorito. It was quickly followed by Trarara Boom Die, In the State of the Old Apple Tree, Mother, 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 Pin a Rose on Me, Come Take a Trip in My Airship, When the Midnight Choo-Choo Comes to Alabama, and Yaka Hula Hika Ula. And several others, many, many others, in fact. The first sound cartoon was not as is commonly thought, Steamboat Willie, but it was a cartoon for Old Kentucky Home. And as time went on, the cartoons, they started to actually use animation for all that it was worth. The words actually began taking the shapes of their meanings. For instance, the previous song we've just seen might look something like this. Except, of course, that Mite would have had real muscles, as would have been something clever. Well would have been the word well, falling down a well, and jump would have been the word jump, jumping. If there was a word to describe the American public reaction to these cartoons, that word would be apeshit. They mobbed the theaters, and apparently the applause would last straight through into the feature. This was the last great moment in sing-alongs, in fact, if I can just digress for just a moment, until 1970, when a young aspiring drummer in Kobe, Japan, named Daisuke Inoue, who couldn't read a note of music and could barely play it, used some money borrowed from his father, a pancake salesman, and fiddling around in his garage came up with the karaoke machine, a process recreated by Sam Potts here. Incidentally neglected to file a patent for his invention, and he never made a dime from it, although he was named by Time Asia as one of the 10 most influential Asians of the 20th century, alongside Gandhi, the Dalai Lama, Mao Zedong, and Pol Pot. Anybody who's ever seen seven shit-faced frat boys working their way through My Way will understand that last comparison. And of course, the next great moment in sing-along came with the debut of punk rock and heavy metal karaoke scene, Mondays at Arlene Grocery. But to return to the Fleischers, they are now stuck with the question, how do you follow the bouncing ball? Brilliantly, as it turned out, the Fleischers were one of the few animators of the time to make the successful leap to talkies. They created Bimbo, a dog that starred in many cartoons, including one in 1931 that featured a little girl dog with nice legs that quickly grew into Betty Boop. In 1933, they debuted the animated Popeye the Sailor Man, and in 1936, the first feature-length cartoon, Popeye the Sailor Meets Sinbad the Sailor, a full year before Snow White, mind you. In 1941, they also debuted the first animated Superman, and it was a Fleischer cartoon that first used the phrase, look up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, et cetera, et cetera. Fleischer Studios, in fact, was Walt Disney's major and only rival at this time. Disney was out in sunny California, of course, while Fleischer remained here in New York, and I think it shows. Their stuff is darker, it's weirder, it's a little more surreal. If you want to get a sense of what I mean, consider, I'm sure you can all get a mental picture of Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck. Fleischer had Samson Mouse, which is clearly the way a New Yorker would view a mouse, and Dora Duck, obviously drawn by someone not overly familiar with ducks. There was also Ferdinand Frog and Gus Gorilla, neither of which will be in any Happy Meals anytime soon. Disney made Cinderella, they made Snow White. Fleischer did a short with Cab Calloway, in which Calloway was rotoscoped into a, quote, ghost walrus, singing Minnie the Moocher, which is about a cocaine addict. And they also had Louis Armstrong singing a song that went, you gave my wife a Coca-Cola so she'd let you play on her viola, which was not made into a bouncing ball cartoon. But, what's up there? Brotherhood, you can just ask Shakespeare or Jeb Bush, is a tricky business. It is said that as Fleischer Studios grew, Max became something of a tyrant. He was given to saying things like, that's so good you'd think I'd done it. When the animators at Fleischer Studios attempted to form a union, Max busted it. Dave had always claimed that he was the one who was actually responsible for the rotoscope and that Max was siphoning money off to a secret account. Max spread rumors that Dave was having an extramarital affair with his secretary. Joe, meanwhile, had stewed in his own juices for decades. He said, I always thought that if I hung around long enough, Max would notice me. Max never did. Lewis tried to keep the peace, but it was too late. In 1942, partly because of the squabbling, Paramount Pictures foreclosed on a $100,000 loan they had made to the Fleischers, and they took it away, renaming it Famous Studios, which turned out anemic imitations of other cartoons, such as Baby Huey, which was modeled on Chuck Jones's Three Bears, Herman and Catnip, which bore a striking resemblance to Tom and Jerry, and Casper the Friendly Ghost, which just plain sucked. No, it sucked. I'm sorry. Max, meanwhile, lived out his life making army training videos like Popeye Meets Eugene the Jeep. Lewis became a lens grinder, and Dave always said that he wanted to write a book called There's No Greater Love, Hate Than Brotherly Love. Still, no matter how this thing ended, the Fleischers need to be remembered for their one shining moment in American history, because I think the bouncing ball is truly technology used to the very best of ends. You'll find very many useful patents in the U.S. Patent Office, but there are very few as happy as old 1,573,696, which is, I think, a declaration of independence of sorts. It said, join us. These songs, this culture, it belongs to everybody. It said, go ahead, sing. Singing is not just for those blessed at birth with perfect pitch or the money for singing lessons or a great memory for lyrics. Singing is not, all due respect, Mrs. Barnum, for the Swedish nightingales of the world. It is also for we bearded ladies, we dog-faced boys. Singing is not for the few, it is for the many, and what's more, it is for the many all at the same time. And so we're going to give it a try, though we are few. I'm going to go first because I'm a professional. Bump, be dumb, be dumb, be bump, be dumb. Got it. Bump, de dump, be dumb, be bump, de dumb. Bump, de dump, be dumb, be bump, de dumb. Okay, you got the point, right? This is the ball. It's my fault. Ready? Bump, de dump, be dumb, be bump, de dumb. Bump, de dump, be dumb, be bump, de dumb. Bump, de dump, be dumb, be bump, de dumb. Bum dee dum be dum be bum dee dum. Bum dee dum be dum be dum dee dum. Bum dee dum be dum be dum dee dum. Bum dee dum be dum be dum dee dum. Bum dee dum be dum be dum dee dum.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on so amazing that keeps us stargazing.
And what do we hope we will see? Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers,
the dreamers.
Brett Martin.
Ah.